Hey there, comic book fans. This is Jonathan Scheck, Jonah Hex from Legends of Tomorrow. And you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Howdy, partners. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. We're heading back to the Old West today with the talented man who brings DC Comics bounty hunter Jonah Hex to life right there on the CW hit series Legends of Tomorrow. Actor Jonathan Scheck, he's going to be riding into town today, so y'all better be on your best behavior, okay? Hey, you do not want to cross Jonah Hex, that is for sure. Jonathan's going to be along in just a few minutes. Glad you took the time to join us today. Man, we're going to have some fun. Quick reminder, before we get to today's show, I'm going to be taking Comic Book Central on the road once again this year to Terrificon in Connecticut. Huge guest list, as always. As I've done for the past few years, I'll be recording content, moderating Q&As, bringing you that audio right here on Comic Book Central. Tickets to Terrificon, they're available now. A lot of stuff coming up, including a big Bat tribute to the late, great Adam West. That's planned with Burt Ward and Lee Merriweather. They're going to be there. They're going to be showing the Batman 1966 movie. They're going to be meeting and greeting the fans there. So it's something you don't want to miss. Here's some more information on the show and how you can get your tickets.
The greatest superheroes come to the Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Terrificon, Connecticut's number one Comic-Con, returns. Meet actors from the Game of Thrones, Flash, Guardians of the Galaxy, Stranger Things, and a special tribute to TV's Batman Adam West on Saturday night. 300 exhibitors, including top artists from Marvel and DC. See the Batmobile, the Batboat, even the Batcopter. It's Terrificon, Connecticut's terrific Comic-Con, Mohegan Sun August 18th to the 20th. Tickets at Mohegan. Mohegan Sun Box Office or Ticketmaster.com. See more at Terrificon.com.
You do not want to miss my Terrificon recap shows right here on Comic Book Central. So if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Comic Book Central in iTunes. You get every episode that's already out there. More than 200 celebrity conversations are out there waiting for you if you haven't heard them already. You get every show that's on the way, including my Terrificon recap. Leave a review in iTunes if you're there. If you're loving what you're hearing, that always helps. Just takes a few minutes to do that. All of the shows are also in the archive at the website. Keep that in mind. So it's comicbookcentral.net. That's the online hub for Comic Book Central, as well as Blueberry and Stitcher. The lair is everywhere. So check out those past episodes if you haven't heard them already. All right, folks, belly up to the bar. I'm going to pour around while you check this out. Then I will be back to talk about cowboys and comic books with Jonathan Scheck. Jonathan was born and raised in Maryland, and he originally studied economics in college before turning his attention to acting. And it is a good thing for us that he did, because over the years he has brought to life some wildly entertaining characters. One of his first acting gigs was bounty hunter Nevada Cooper on the Western sci-fi series Briscoe County Jr., starring Bruce Campbell. Yeah, Firefly was not the first series to match up those two genres. And 2 years later, Jonathan got his big break on the big screen, directed by none other than Tom Hanks in That Thing You Do. Now, the story, written by Hanks, features Jonathan as Jimmy Mattingly, part of a 60s rock and roll band that hits the big time with the title track. And more feature films and TV roles followed, including the title roles in Houdini and Judas, and Colonel Sherman in the History Channel miniseries Texas Rising. In 2016, it was back to bounty hunting for Jonathan, when he landed the role of DC Comics' Jonah Hex for a season one episode of the time-traveling CW hit series Legends of Tomorrow. Now, created by writer John Albano and artist Tony DiZuniga, Hex first appeared in 1972's All-Star Western issue number 10. And the bounty hunter with the horribly scarred face has gone through many changes over the decades, most notably the 1980s comic book series Hex and the failed 2010 feature film starring Josh Brolin. Now, the outcome of the film, however, didn't dissuade producers of Legends of Tomorrow from bringing the character to the CW series. In the season one episode, The Magnificent Eight, the Legends time travel back to the Old West, where, after a knockdown, drag-out barroom brawl, they meet up with the enigmatic antihero.
All right! Playtime's over. Anybody's got a problem with that? The answer to me. Thank you, Mr.
X. Jonah X. You're not from around here, are you?
No. My friends and I are from out of town.
Way out of town.
Season 2 brought us another Hex appearance, a little more background on the mysterious character, and an epic confrontation with his classic comic book nemesis, Quentin Turnbull, played by Jeff Fahey.
Turnbull! Well, if it ain't the great Jonah Hex himself. Ooh, you got quite a pair to walk into my establishment like this.
You're like a cockroach. Hard to kill.
I'm taking you in. Alive or dead. You're tools.
But there is still so much to learn about this TV version of Jonah Hex. And today, we hope to get a little more insight from the man who brings him to life. Now, whether it's creating a hit song in the 1960s or bounty hunting in the 1870s, my guest today has crafted some very, very memorable roles. Let's go time traveling with Jonathan Scheck. Jonathan, welcome to Comic Book Central.
Pleasure to be here, Joe.
We're going to go time travel. We're going to hit just about every decade with you. We're going to go all over the place today. Look, you go through your IMDb page. You go through some of your roles. You've spent your share of time in the Old West on screen. Did Westerns appeal to you growing up at all?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much my father really, you know, watched on television. A lot of Clint Eastwood, John Wayne. He loved John Wayne. Yeah.
Okay, so you were doing your homework for Jonah Hex pretty early then.
With your dad. I actually was.
And your dad was a police officer too, right?
Yes, he was a Baltimore City cop.
And you grew up in Maryland?
Yep, grew in the outskirts of Baltimore.
Okay, so Westerns, are you just kind of like hanging out with your dad, watching the Westerns? Did they appeal to you? Comic books appeal to you? What was the, or all of it?
Well, pretty much all of it. Like the Westerns were always on television. You got to remember there's 4 channels back then. So actually there's 3 channels.
I was going to say there's always like 3 and then the syndicated where I saw my Batman.
Yeah, the
Batman
one that you had
to get
the antenna ears out and make sure that really that's what we did, right?
Yep. That's exactly what we did. You have the tinfoil and yep. So what kind of, so Daredevil and Wolverine fan growing up?
Major Daredevil and Wolverine fan.
Those are the 2 big ones?
They're the 2 big ones. I collected pretty much every Daredevil there was. I even got Daredevil as I grew up. I got him on my shoulder, a Daredevil tattoo. Because I felt like I was always the kid that was fighting for good, but I was just nothing but bad.
There's always like these anti-heroes or street-level heroes coming into your life, right?
Yeah. Much so.
So that when you say you have like every Daredevil, like what were the classic runs that you had? And do you still have your comic books today? Because that's always the big question.
I have some of them. I don't have all of them.
Okay.
The ones I kept that survived are a lot of the old World War II ones. Sergeant Rock. I have some of my Jonah Hex survived. I don't want to go in the, I go in the other room to check, but I don't want to get in the way of my son watching his movie while I talk to you.
Or so. Tip him off that there are collectible comic books in the other room. That's the key. Don't let him know that just yet. He's still a little too young. He might start wanting to pull them out of the, do you keep them in, team protected, or are they all just like free in the box?
No, they're not in the box. They're in a little case, this glass case.
Okay. Okay, so you got collectibles. So you were collecting Jonah Hex then early on.
Yeah, we started collecting Hex. He would just get the magazines and bring them back to the house. So when he was on the beat, you know, he'd pick up a couple comic books and bring them home. I'm sure there was some kind of bookstore or comic book store on his beat as he was working, come back home.
Was it like a bunch of different ones? Because I know like that was 71, 72 coming into, I think the cover date was 71, but I think it came out 72. So I was like 5. So I was kind of like Archie, Richie, Rich, more superheroes. I fully admit I kind of missed out on Jonah Hex first time around. Did you have all those other ones, or did you kind of lean toward like maybe those Western and the gunslinger kind of things? You say the war comics and things like that.
Yeah, I definitely sided towards that, but I remember having a Richie Rich.
Okay.
I remember having a Richie Rich, absolutely.
He worked his way in.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to ask was, you know, when you talk about doing homework and things like that, do you have a copy of All-Star Western number 10, his first appearance? Did anybody like Jeff Johns or anybody get that to you?
No. I have it, yeah.
Oh, you do have it, the original. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
All-Star Westerns, yep.
Okay. So, well, that isn't
with
that,
me.
No, but that is in your collection, too. So where did the interest in acting then come from? Like, how do you go from, you know, just what kind of kid were you and when did the interest in acting spark? Or was that like later even in college?
It definitely sparked in college. There was no possibility of acting when I grew up. There was no, you know, I wasn't the kid that would do the after school play or anything like that. I didn't really think anything of it. I was a sports kid. I was very little. So I was always constantly trying to get better at the sports so that I could play it because it kept cutting me. And
what'd you play? What sports were you into?
I played football when I was young, up until high school, and I was too little to play in the high school. They wouldn't let me play. I was 98 pounds.
What position?
And
you
baseball
play?
Too. They. I was when I was growing up. I was quarterback and linebacker.
Quarterback and linebacker.
Everyone else got bigger. Yeah, I would go back and forth. You know, when you're young, you can go back and forth in each side.
Okay.
Yeah, we had our teams were so ridiculously good. We were unscored upon and unbeaten for like 3 years.
Seriously?
Yeah, we were really good. I grew up. Off
were
an
you
Army
that
team.
Good, or were the other teams around you that bad? Because that's a pretty amazing. Or was it a combination of both? Maybe.
It was because we were a bunch of Army brats. We had drill sergeants as our coaches. So. They were, I know, it's absolutely true. They were just diligent. And, you know, we were so well conditioned as opposed to all the other kids. You know, you're supposed to be just be kids and playing for fun, but we were so serious. We also had a lot of kids that would travel in the area, and they just a lot of really great athletes came through Edgewood. So, yeah, so I was really into sports. And then I didn't really get a hint of acting until my father was working on it was Hairspray in Baltimore. They were making Hairspray, and they had a dance sequence to dance people to be able to do 1950 dances. I did all those dances with my mom, and my mom and my uncle taught me how to do those kind of dances. So my father talked to producers and said, you know, my son could do that, and show them pictures of me and everything. And they said, absolutely, bring him in and we'll put him in the scene. So basically, would have been an extra.
Okay, so what was your dad do? He was running security there or something, or what?
Yeah, he was a policeman hired to protect, you know,
off duty to do security. Okay, yeah. So he's in there and he's like, hey, maybe my kid could do this. All right.
Yep. He was doing uniform. They would hire guys, you know, overtime. It was called overtime.
Yeah,
is what they considered overtime during that time. So he did that, and then I didn't show up. I was supposed to show up, and I was too scared to show up. I know. I burnt my dad's heart, made him look, you know, silly to the people there because, you know, cops don't walk up to the producers and say, hey, how's it going? Can my son freaking come to your set?
Yeah, not a show. So, police officers usually aren't showbiz parents. Those two worlds usually don't collide.
I know, right? Yeah.
Where do you see my kid? Yeah, wait till you see my kid.
Yeah, that felt horrible, man. That was one reason why I actually, it bothered me so much that I did that. That when I got into college, I took an acting class, and they were making a movie, another movie in Baltimore. So it was real. It was like finally dawned on me that this is actually a real thing that I could do. And then when I took the acting class, everything just kind of facilitated for me. Like I was good at math. I was horrible at reading, and I had no idea why. And so I had these textbooks just drove me nuts, and it would hurt me, my brain almost. And so I went to my teachers and told them that I wanted to go out and pursue a career in acting. And obviously my acting teacher was like, wow. He was like, you should probably take a couple more calls. But I had this opportunity to go out there, and I did. Went out to California, and then I started studying acting.
Okay, now, during this move, did I read correctly that your father was the one that sort of convinced you to aim higher than your first pursuit in a career in showbiz?
You know, he did, and it was just kind of faded the way it happened. You know, I could dance very well, and there was a group called Chippendales during the time. It was one of the most popular things. Yeah. With the ladies, and being 18 years old, it was something I was interested in doing. And it was because I had taken a couple dance classes at my college too. And people would tell me like, you could do this, you know, this is something that, you know, you could go do right now. And I pursued it. I sent, tape in and, of me dancing and photographs and all that thing. And I got an audition for Chippendales. They flew me to California and they put me up at a hotel, and then I had to go through the routines of like something you would see in American Idol kind of thing, but not on television. So all these guys come in and
it's like that scene in Mr. Mom big. where they take Michael Keaton out.
So we're going in the studio every single day with Mike Black, who was a choreographer, and you know, these guys were all monsters. They were all muscular, and I just could dance. I could just dance. Oddly enough, Jonah Hex can dance. And I did. I was like, you know, I was doing all these routines, and they kept making them harder and harder. And then within 5 days, they offered me a contract. And I never had really been offered a contract before. I contracted to go to college. I didn't really get what they were offering. It didn't seem to be very good. And I talked to my father about it, and he wasn't too happy with it. He didn't think that was something that would be good for me. And I didn't really see the negativity in any of it. People may think strippers isn't the highest calling, but you know, when you're 18 years old and you're going to travel every state, making money, and it just seemed like it was something I wanted to do. But I really got this acting bug. So I at that very time I met an acting teacher, and from my father saying, you know, you could do so much more, and then this acting teacher meeting me and auditioning me, him basically saying, you know, you really could do this. And I turned them down. And it was probably one of the best decisions of my life.
Good advice from Dad.
My dad's always giving perfect advice.
Hairspray, okay. Chippendales, not so much. Good advice from Dad. That's good parenting right there. That's just good parenting right there. Something you look. You got a 3-year-old there. That's something you can take from your dad.
I know.
Okay, so so getting into so a lot of different roles, but you know, one we certainly definitely want to talk about today is Jonah Hex. We'll get to that. Jonah Hex, though, not your first time playing a bounty hunter.
Probably not. I was just saying.
What can you tell us about Nevada Cooper, better known as Coop?
Oh my God. Nevada Cooper was, I got an audition with this great casting director, and I went in there and I had so much fun playing a cowboy. Nevada Cooper, friends call me Coop. And, you know, through the nerves of auditioning, I was successful. I don't know how I was, but I was successful. And they called me in and they said, you know, you got this part. And I was beside myself. I went out to Universal Studios back lot, and Bruce Campbell was the lead guy, Briscoe County Jr. And we were part of a bounty hunting convention. Yeah. They brought all the people together. We're going back pretty far here.
Yeah, we are. So look, I dig deep on Comic Book Central, especially when it comes to Bruce Campbell, man.
I love Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, who doesn't?
So yes. So that was kind of the first I ever did. I remember working that six shooter so hard. I was, you know, there was no YouTube. You can like look up YouTube. So you just break, you know, basically you didn't spend any time on your phone. All you did was work whatever you had in front of you, and that was my gun. And I got so good that I got Bruce a little worried. I was faster than him. But he was great, man. He could tell that I was green as could be, and I was a really nice young man, and I was very respectful to everyone. And I was very creative, and I didn't have much of an ego at that time. And he was wonderful. He took me under his wing there for a little bit. And I got a movie. Yeah, that's what happened. I got a movie, and I had to leave for like a year. And they basically offered me a contract.
Okay, that's what I wanted to ask. That's what I wanted to ask you about, because the episode ends, and man, you're coming back. Like, you even tell Briscoe, like, I'm coming back. We're going to see each other again. Was that the thought, that Coop was going to be a recurring role in the series? I'm guessing, since they made you the offer, I guess it was.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't on top of everything, because everything was happening. You know, when something would happen, you were kind of just go with it. And you know, I didn't have like a proper representation at the time. And I got this movie. I'm almost positive. No. Now, this was after. No, I had done this big movie. I did one big movie, and I came back. This was my first audition, like going into casting directors, and I got that opportunity pretty quick. And then they offered me that, and I got the offer for a movie called Doom Generation. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, because there's always these controversial things in my life. I look back on them like, I should have took that. What the hell was I thinking? Look, I love Doom Generation. It's one of the movies people can really recognize me if they stay up late at night and they watch movies. They watch Doom Generation, and if they say to me, "Hey, man, I love Xavier Redd," I'm like, "Wow, you're crazy." He was an anti-hero, oddly enough. So I played Xavier Redd, and I turned down Briscoe County Jr.
Okay, yeah. Well, and then the thing is, you know, the series it ran one season, so you know, it's not like it ran 10 years or anything, so. You know, as you go through, look, there, you've never been lacking for work. As you can see, the parts that came your way. And pretty early on, my goodness, Jimmy Mattingly, that thing you do. Okay. And by the way, the song that never goes away. You recently reunited with the Wonders, right?
Yeah. That was amazing.
Okay. How cool is that? Tom Hanks calls it the coolest thing in the world. You guys got together. How did that develop? You guys got together the other night, or not the other night, but you know, a couple months ago, I think it was. And
the year before was our 20th anniversary, and I had like Funny or Die call me up. I had so many people call me up to try to make us part of like a skit or you know a show. I had someone wanted to put us on tour, and for some reason they called me. And they didn't, you know, they didn't call Tom Hanks. They called me, or Tom was just too busy probably. And so I literally called Tom Hanks, Tom Scott, Steve Zahn, Ethan. I was like, you know, what are you guys doing? They want us to do this. And sometimes the guys would be like, oh, that's interesting. We should do that. And then finally, after all these offers, I had to tell Tom, Steve Zahn and Tom Scott both said to me, listen, this is fun and great, and it all works. I mean, you know, we can get together as us, but when they want us to play those characters, we have to be respectful because it's not our characters. That was something that Tom Hanks wrote. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. It was like, you know, it's his story. Yeah. We can't just go out and play characters on, you know, SNL or Funny or Die. We have to like work with Tom. And then when I realized that that's some of these people were really asking us to go out there and be our characters, I immediately called, you know, Tom, and I was just like, man, this was going on. And it was like, you know, I got this. He was like making four films in a row. And he was like, I get this. And it's fun, man. But, you know, can we wait to this, you know, time and time? So we pushed it back until this moment where Tom Scott said, hey, my brother-in-law, I think it was his brother-in-law, is doing a comedy skit on at the Roxy. And they're going to bring me out for that. They're going to play that thing you do. And they thought it would be really funny if I came out there and just played the drums and they sang the song. And said, would you want to come and be part of it? And then Ethan did the same thing. We tried to get Steve's on, but he lives in Kentucky, so it wasn't so easy. And so we rehearsed like three times. I sent pictures to Tom that we were rehearsing. I guess he just didn't really put two and two together. And no one knew about it. So yeah. We didn't do any press before it or anything. And just before we went on, man, I used social media the first time to really kind of like say, hey, man, I got something really special here. And we put on the internet. It went viral. People really loved it. And when we were on stage, that club went nuts. They went nuts.
Yeah, that was such a huge song.
Yeah, it resonated with everybody in that place. And boy, that made me feel so good. I know all the boys really enjoyed it. We wish Steve Zahn was there just so we could all kind of celebrate, you know, 20 years being relevant. That's phenomenal. And, you know, when the movie came out, you know, Tom Hanks is just a human being, but he's a great actor. He's a great man. And he's so used to everything being number one. He's just winning world championships, you know? And that thing you do, it wasn't a box office success. It wasn't a failure. It wasn't like the number one. And you gotta look, Tom had won 2 Academy Awards before that.
Back to back.
So they told me any other time in his life or in he wouldn't have been able to make that movie.
Mm-hmm. It's such a personal project and such a small story. It almost has the feel of like an independent film when you watch it. And he kept
with the production value.
With the production
value of a major studio feature.
Right, right.
That's exactly what it was.
That's what helps having Tom Hanks behind it. Look, he you know, wrote, produced, you know, he directed everything, did everything. But he didn't direct again another feature for like another 15 years. Did you guys do something to him? Or like, were you guys just that good that he just didn't think he could top his directing experience after that?
You know what it is? It's one of the most beautiful stories I can ever tell anybody. He had children. His boys. Mm. He didn't want to not be there for them, because when you direct, it takes so much of your time. It takes you in the editing room. You know, it takes you promoting it and everything. So he made sure that he could take his kids to school.
Yeah, the director. Yeah, every beginning to end, soup to nuts. I mean, they're there 24/7 on that thing. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It did take a little while. How was he as a director? Because that's a pretty early on project for you too, so that had to be intimidating coming in to that set.
Well, I think because Tom makes you feel like $1 million. He makes everybody feel great. He was just exceptional as a director. I mean, I watched the way he directed, and I had not that much experience, but I did work with some pretty brilliant directors up till that moment. And I tell you, he's such an actor's director that it's hard to do this nowadays, because most film productions are always on a very tight schedule. But when we were filming like that kiss scene, when me and Liv break up and she says, I wasted a thousand kisses on you, a million kisses, or how many kisses? There's a lot of kisses, and a lot of kids have kicked me in the shins because of it over the years. But Tom Hanks, this is the way he directed. So he put us in this sequence in the scene. They had an idea where he was going to go with the scene and cover it and everything. But he couldn't quite figure out what I was doing and why I was doing what I was doing. And I was stringing my guitar, if you watch the movie. And, you know, I knew that I was a kid in the movie. I knew that a lot of people would be like very anti-Jimmy by the end of it. And that was kind of the point. It was my job. But I knew that if I had this one note in the script that could redeem him and give him dignity, was that he knew that his dream was so important. And his music was the thing that was getting those guys out of Erie, Pennsylvania. And if he didn't believe in it, if he didn't continue with it, if he let anything else get in the way of it, it would end that for them. So I was constantly in the film being the artist. It was so much fun working with Steve Zahn and Tom Hanks. And it took me a lot not to laugh, because they're so funny as human beings. And their characters, and you know, it's so much fun. But I kept that one note that he was a musician. He wanted to get he wanted to express his craft and be the best that he could. So he was stringing his guitar during the course of that breakup. He wasn't paying her any attention because he was in love with the music.
You brought that
Tom
into it.
Literally, yeah. So nice. Tom literally, I remember he filmed it like 20 times. I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like, this is the first time in the process of filmmaking that he was just like, you know, he couldn't, he kept me working.
Yeah.
And I mean, I went through like 25 strings and it was just like, it was getting tough. I was like, I started to feel like I was doing something wrong. And then all of a sudden he looked at me and goes, it's your guitar. And I go, yeah. He goes, oh my God. Okay. So get the camera on a close up of the guitar. And he's stringing it up.
He just loved what you were doing with it.
He was like, yeah, because he realized that Jimmy, you know, it was all about his guitar. That's why I wasn't turned towards wow. Liv the whole time that she was, you know, saying those words. You know, I think, I wouldn't put this on Tom Hanks, is that, you know, he thought it was going to be me looking at her being angry and then her just, you know, pouting and saying all those things and painfully. But I wasn't paying her any attention. I was stringing my guitar.
Pretty good instincts. Yeah.
Yeah. So his insight on how to capture an actor is very unique. You know, I'm sure that they do that when Daniel Day-Lewis is working or was working.
Or was, yeah.
I'm sure they do that.
There's an opening
Tom.
Now.
Like, yeah. Like when Tom, you know, when Spielberg's working with Tom, he's like, you know, go do your thing and let me see if I can figure out what the hell you're doing and capture it with the camera and help tell the story. They don't do that as much anymore. It's all like, you know, it's moving very quickly and stuff like that. But even like in Legends, they, you know, some of those directors, they really kind of watch me because I'm an odd person, odd character. So it's interesting to watch what I do because I'm not going to come with your typical choices. And I watched with the camera how they could capture some of those choices and help tell the tale that I was trying to help tell, you know. The canvas could be, it's a red canvas. If it's a red canvas and you're painting red, no one's going to see what you're doing. So you can't necessarily go along with everything that's going on. That's, you got to get streaks of, you know, yellow and blue in there, or you're just going to fade into the material and not stand out.
Well, you brought us right to it. And yeah, let's talk about what you bring to Jonah Hex. Well, first of all, when did you first hear that they wanted to bring Jonah Hex to Legends of Tomorrow and this whole Arrowverse universe that's on the CW?
It was last year, and I can't remember if it was January, February. It was what they call pilot season out here. And man, it came across an email, and I was just like, you got to be kidding me. They're casting for Jonah Hex? They want me to go in? I'm like, this is fantastic. And it turned out to be right up the street from me. So there was a lot of reasons why I couldn't say no or I couldn't get there in time. And I was just like, wow, this is going to be really work out for me. I'm going to go up there and meet everybody and see what this is all about. It was exciting, you know? And in the breakdown, they said that the character would be I had the email. It says something like, a very strong reoccurring, in other words, going to be on this show a lot with the potential of turning into a regular. And I, you know, it got me excited because, you know, I wanted to transition into TV. I have a little boy now and I travel to make movies and it is wonderful. And as grateful as I am that people hire me, it's tough leaving my son. It's really tough. If California wasn't so expensive, I wouldn't have to worry about, what's coming next. So a television series seemed like the perfect idea. So I was all over it. And I went in there and I remember it. There was like, they waited till everyone, they do this in Hollywood. They wait till everyone is that's auditioning for the part. They wait till they're all in the same room and then they bring one in at a time. And guys were coming with the cowboy boots, and it's a laundry list of who's who from television that came in there to audition for Jonah Hex. And I just was like, oh my God, here we go. I snarled my way through the audition. I was having so much fun. And then afterwards, they brought it up that I could, you know, to talk with them. And I think it was Mark. I tell you the truth, I can't remember if it was him or not, Mark Guggenheim.
Yeah, the showrunner for Arrow, and yeah.
But I think it was him, because afterwards, I know we've talked numerous times, but very kind to me. And I was just like, are you guys bringing Sergeant Rock? Because if you had Sergeant Rock and Jonah Hex on the same screen at the same time, it would literally change the course of DC Comics. You know, Sergeant Rock has never been portrayed, and he's such a tough and rough and tumble, you know, hero.
Yeah.
We need him out there. So we're like, and this, that got a little bit of interest from everyone.
Okay.
And
so you went fanboy going in.
Oh, I was giggly fanboy. I wanted to talk to them. I was hoping they wouldn't actually audition me. I was hoping I wouldn't have to say the lines, cause I just wanted to talk about it. I literally was like, I was bouncing up and down before I walked in there.
That's what got you the part.
And I was like, I mean,
incredible acting ability, I'm sure. But that said, I guarantee you everybody in that room was probably, they probably know their stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a single actor.
But you go in and you know the character. You know these characters. Like, and you're passionate about them. That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not the best auditioner, so whatever I do in those rooms is a disaster usually. And for years, it actually was to my benefit that I stumbled my way through an audition. And not purposefully, just because of my learning abilities, I just couldn't do it. I'm dyslexic, so that if they don't give me time, I can't see material properly. I see it completely different, which you tend to be an advantage over the years. As I get older, it got tougher, especially television, it got tougher. But going in there, knowing that character, I mean, I think I even grunted a couple lines and not even said them.
Okay, that's what I'm curious about, because you go in fanboy, but that's one of my big questions for is when you go in, do you channel young Jonathan sitting there watching Clint Eastwood Westerns with your dad? Are you hearing, because like Clint Eastwood was famous for just tossing out tons of pages of dialogue, especially with the, you know, the Fistful of Dollars movies and things like that, and just kind of growling his way. Are you channeling all that? Is that all conscious, or is that just sort of in the moment?
You know, it's all in the moment. So all that stuff that we talked about, knowing who Jonah Hex was there, the one that was written in the material that I was trying to portray, all this stuff I worked on prior to getting there. And I probably put more energy into this because I like it. I knew it. And, but when I walk into a door, I usually leave everything outside the door so that I'm not dragging, you know, a bunch of ideas. So I can be more into the moment. And that's pretty much that's the thing that gets me stumbling. But it's also the thing that shows uniqueness. Every actor should know that they have to be unique. They have to stand out. Cause everyone's going to go in there and do a really good job. And I just think that I look like Josh Brolin. I think that helped. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody there was dark, but that anti-hero has been kind of a consistent with me throughout my career. Just worked. I mean, I really played Jonah Hex, and they were ready to hire me. I got hired like 6 hours after that. And
are you serious?
Yeah,
like not that whole horrible waiting for the phone to ring kind of thing. I mean, you had it and you knew it.
Yeah, they were like, he's the guy.
That's amazing.
I think David Rappaport, the casting director, really helped solidify that. So, yeah, I had a lot of. A lot of things going in my favor. I think being fanboy, being right for the role.
Yeah.
And, but you know, it was only two. Everything was shot seemingly last year. Everything was shot last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in the beginning of the second season and to the end of the first season. And then the election happened. And when that election happened, I don't think Jonah Hex was the most popular character over there at Legends of Tomorrow or with DC. Because he represents, you know, this disgruntled side of America that they weren't sure of. And I was like, I tried to tell him, I was like, look, Jonah Hex could unify the red and the blue states together. And they weren't having any of that. So I don't know what's going to happen to John. I think he's going to come in and do an episode here for season 3. I seem to be the relief for the actors, because they're working so hard. I come in there and I kind of do an episode where I kind of take a lot of the time, you know, so they can have some time off. Like I worked with Katie, so she wasn't off. It was great to work with Katie, man. She's something else.
You have a lot of great scenes, but especially because you didn't get too many in the first episode, but you got a lot in the second one. There's a pretty cool dynamic between the two of you, because she gets right in your face in the second episode.
Yeah, I know. She's tough.
She's got to be fun to play off of as an actor.
She is. She was fantastic. I mean, you know, I come in there with so much actor stuff. I'd like to work with some of the greatest actors of my years, and I love acting. I love it. It's the extension of being a dancer or a painter to me nowadays. And so when I go there, you have a bit of enthusiasm, but I'm not green. But you're still a guest star. You're not part of the regular cast. Mm-hmm. And the regular cast has to go through so many things, like, you know, they have to worry about where their trailers are, and, you know, if they're going to be able to get off for the weekend to go see their kids. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're living their life. And so when a guest star comes in there, you become part of their worlds.
Well, you mentioned, you know, coming into this, going into the audition, you read some of the comic books going into it?
Yes. I got my father to send them out before I went in there.
Okay.
He FedExed them to me.
Anything that you saw in the comic books, any panels, any looks, any lines, anything that struck you that you said, I do want to try to bring this to it?
Sense of humor. I won that role. I know why I won that role, because I brought a sense of humor to the character. Hmm. You know, he's rough and tumble, but he had a great sense of humor to a dry sense of humor.
Especially between you and Brandon Routh, too.
I know. That was so much fun. Yeah. Play off him because he's such a straight shooter.
Yeah, you get to play off that. Now, you mentioned Josh Brolin. Look, there's the feature film that we have, 2010. It did not work. Was that a part of any of the discussion, either during the audition process or suiting up or getting the makeup on or, you know, action roll camera? Was that any part of, we don't want to do this or we like this? How did that play into it at all?
No. Because I talked to Jimmy Palmiotti from the comic book world. Mm-hmm. He told me, he said, they've deviated so much for that film. And when they did that, they lost the core group of comic book, you know, readers with Jonah in it, and it didn't work. Like, the things that they created didn't work for the character. I think there's enough for Jonah Hex that does work, that you don't need to create all these new things that they did. And, you know, they tried to tell that story, and it didn't work. And
yeah, they brought in all these supernatural powers in and things like that that he doesn't have in the comic books.
I tell you what I did look at is his scar. So yeah, I looked at the scar to see how he wore it, how he moved his mouth, and I wanted to hear his accent. I wanted to hear what kind of accent, what kind of, you know, how he used his voice. And those are the things I looked at. I knew that they would design the costume. I wouldn't have anything to do with that. Yeah, that was pretty much all I took from Josh's performance. I mean, I know he did his homework. I know when you're dealing with someone with something that big, you got to go along with a lot, but he definitely had a lot to say, but he can't change the course of the story. And he can't change the final edit unless he pulls an Ed Norton. So, you know, I know he's a really, really strong actor. That's really strong work. And he was my direct competition there for maybe 3 years until he took off. And that's pretty much, I looked at the scar, the voice, I made sure I was faster with my guns.
A lot of practice.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the scar. Yeah, I mean, coming in, talk about the makeup process too, because it's got to be kind of funky for you, that, like, the weeks leading up to it, because you got to have almost like this 5-6 day kind of growth, and then, like, there's no way you can have anything on that side.
Oh my God. When I first went there, I thought to myself, wow, you know, it happened pretty fast. So I did have a bit of a beard. So I thought, I'm just going to wear my beard there. When I get there, you know, we can figure it out. And so basically what we did was we took my beard and we put the scar and everything over top of it, and then had to shave certain areas for the scar. And just kind of made it more real, so it wasn't just on a pretty boy face, even though I'm not pretty boy anymore. with a little bit of scruff, because if you notice in the comic book, man, he had scruff every time. Yeah. A little bit of scruff here and there, except in the beginning. In the beginning, first time Jonah Hex came out, it was always kind of clean shaven because he was more military. So we just, so I walked around. The one funniest thing was me walking around Vancouver with a half a beard when I wasn't working. I looked like I was straight from ISIS. You know, this guy, you're like, the guy that they capture, they're always like, you know, miserable as hell. Half a beard from being burnt. It was ridiculous. I was so silly.
You suffer for your art, my friend. You suffer for your art. Look, we talked the one of the greatest scenes, and especially in the second episode, Outlaw Country, with Jeff Fahey, the great Jeff Fahey. You got to work with him. This is the second time working with him. Texas Rising. So you got a couple of Westerns under your belt with Jeff Fahey. Just talk about working with him and the emotional intensity of just that final scene.
Well, you know, the very first project we worked together was something called Texas Rising. That was with Bill Paxton.
Yeah, and, great.
I know. And Jeff was with Bill in every scene. I was with Bill in every scene that I was in, because I was kind of his nemesis in the piece. So, yeah, we were always together. We always had a drive together to the set. We were always riding together. And he's great on horseback. He's accomplished like 100-mile rides on horses and stuff. Oh, wow. All this stuff with special forces also. And so, and I had done so much horse work prior, but we were on those horses every single day, all day.
This was for Texas Rising.
Yeah, for Texas Rising. Yeah. So, you know, getting to do this Western together, this was like so much fun. And that's what he said to me. You know, he called me up and was like, this is going to be a lot more fun than Texas Rising. It was miserable shooting Texas Rising. It's tough. You know, it was like, we were like, Jeff would sit on the sidelines when they made me fall off my horse four times in a row. You know, he's like, wow, yeah, I don't know if I'd do it that way, buddy, but go for it. That's really good. You look really good falling off your horse. I was like, I thought a stunt guy would have to fall off the horse. He's like, usually a stuntman does, right? And he's like, So this time when we were out there, we got to have that fight sequence, and he saw me in that makeup and stuff, and he thought I looked fantastic, and I was playing a role really, really interesting. And I told him the history of Jonah Hex and Turnbull. I was like, you know, Turnbull mate, by the way, Turnbull is the prime minister's last name of Australia. It's like, it's not that Turnbull. Yeah.
Different Turnbull. So you're kind of like, you know, you're just kind of like being his like nerd contact here and just kind of bringing him up to speed on the fanboy stuff.
Yeah. I was so excited that, you know,
very cool.
My Turnbull was a Jeff freaking Fahey, man. It's awesome.
It plays well. I mean, it plays well. Though, I'll be honest, those are my two favorite episodes of the series so far. And anytime I know that you're going to be strapping on the six shooter, man, I just get excited about that. You mentioned, you know, early on that this was supposed to be a recurring role. I'm guessing we're going to see him in season three. I know there's no official announcement, but it would only make sense that we would see him in season three. And again, you mentioned there was this whole, you know, thing after the election that they weren't sure how they were going to use him or whatever. Do you know where they want to go with Jonah Hex? You don't have to tell us. We don't need any spoilers or anything. But do you know where they want to go with Jonah Hex?
No, I don't. I read that he was coming back for season three and they had a special episode.
Okay.
I knew that they're not going to bring him back in a regular state, and they're not going to make him part of the cast for every episode and make him time travel for a consistent basis, because they would have contracted me already. Okay. So I don't know what's going to happen with him. I hope he's going to come back. I hope he gets his justice this time. I mean, it was fun to do that the second time with Katie. But it was kind of left that he was a certain type, and, you know, I was trying to play that he understood a lot more than people they were giving him. Cause he, you know, like one thing about him, he was a slave when he grew up as a boy. He was a slave to the Apaches, his father sold into slavery. And so when he was fighting for the Confederacy, he came to realize what they were fighting for. Now, he didn't, most individuals really get what they were fighting for during the course of the Civil War. When he realized they were fighting to be able to continually own their slaves, he was like, "That's, I'm not doing that." That's, I, and he explained it to his fellow comrades in arms, and he said, I can't do this anymore. And he left. And he went to the, he surrendered to the Union soldiers. And there's a story behind it in the comic book that is really kind of gut-wrenching what happens.
Yeah.
But he, you know, that's Jonah Hex. So he's always like, you know, fighting for the people that couldn't fight for themselves. And that's a big part of, I think, what we need in this, if the election is true, what we're missing is that there's a whole side of the country that felt like they were being a victim. And this is ridiculous. I think that the two sides continually want to make the other side an enemy when we really are one. And if we're not one, we're just like everybody else in this world. And Jonah Hex, he could be the one that joins both sides. I mean, come on, not really, but.
Well, you hit on the yeah. You hit on the thing that's interesting to me about the character, because they keep dropping all these hints throughout. Like, we don't know where his uniform comes from in the show. We know where it comes from in the comic books, but we don't know if he was a soldier. They haven't made that. They haven't established that. We know he has this huge backstory with Rip Hunter.
Yep.
You know that's you know played by Arthur Darvill, and like, how often is he going to be back on the show? We know in the comic books, you're a big comic book guy. Rip Hunter's dad is Booster Gold.
I know.
They keep talking
It'd be
about
great, right?
Okay. Well, you know, have you had any discussions with these folks? Like, because that's the rumors that possibly Booster Gold might be coming in season 3. Is that something that you would be interested in, or would you more of a classic? So not so much time travel, but maybe more of a classic Western tales.
Well, you know what? The classic Western tales would be fantastic, but you know, Hex. Not Jonah Hex, but Hex did travel. And God, you could see that guy traveling and being kind of like the wizard, the wise man.
The stuff doesn't bother him. When he sees time travels, that doesn't bother him. Like, he gets it.
Yeah, because he's time traveled. Mm-hmm. He gets all of it.
Okay.
I think he gets it in a very deep way, you know, the way to make things right on the good side of humanity. He would be a huge asset for the crew to really make these decisions, and he's got the best two guns in the in the world. But they haven't talked about Booster Gold or anybody
okay.
to me. And I talked to a couple people about trying to get a Jonah Hex series together, but they got so much on their plate. Pretty much every character on there is always trying to. Branch off, like who's, you know, what series are going to make their own series, and everybody's dealing with that. So I guess whoever has the most Twitter followers or Instagram followers is going to get their own show.
Look, you hit the question I had, because that is something that you've mentioned, but you haven't heard anything back from them. Because when I watch these two episodes, I'm like, oh man, just give Jonah Hex a show. There's so much you could do with it. It's unbelievable.
There really is. And there's tons in the comic book world. And then there's just tons. He's an action hero and perfect anti-hero to go into his own series. Absolutely. He can handle it. But you know, I think that they look at almost like a dead property after the movie came out. Wasn't a success, no matter how I portrayed him or, whether I had success with it with the fans or whatever, I think that they're just looking at it as that he proved to them that he couldn't open up a movie.
But could it be like a 10-episode Netflix series? Could it be like a mini series or a series of TV movies?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
It'd be great. I mean, people would watch it. I know.
Look, speaking for myself and probably most of my listeners, I know we would. That's for sure.
Well, Marvel, you know, I know I brought it up to a couple people. Marvel kind of works with Netflix exclusively. I don't see any DC over there. And, I mean, DC's had some incredible success, with the woman. So, where would they go on television? You know, they got the CW's got four different unions with them, so they don't have much more room. They have five now, right? They have another one to come on.
Yeah, Black Lightning.
So you know, you got to think, where would a Western tell do really well? I thought maybe CMT could be a fit, because they're doing series now.
But and AMC's doing some comic book stuff now too.
Yeah, AMC Hell on Wheels was a big success. You know, I think that when it comes down to it, the big equation before you green light a series is why did that movie not do well?
Why do you think it didn't? Do you think just because they deviated from the character so much? Or that was another question I had was, you know, Lone Ranger. Disney wasn't happy with the Lone Ranger. Do you think just Western heroes are just a tough sell as like the main event?
I think the people that want to go see Westerns need to see Westerns, like Clint Eastwood Westerns, where, you know, the stakes are real and they camped up, camped is a good word or bad word, but they camped it up a little bit too much for that audience and it doesn't appeal to them. So you got to do a Hell on Wheels. You got to do what HBO did with the Western. Pretty much what Costner does every Western and Clint Eastwood does with them. He makes them really tough, brutal, you know. And Jonah Hex could do that easily. But that's not going to fit on the CW.
No, but AMC or possibly Netflix, that might be a thing. Or like you said, HBO. But, well, at least we know that you're out there talking to the folks about it. We'd love to see it. Look, I know you can't be specific about the future of Jonah Hex, but what about the future of Jonathan Scheck? What can we expect to see you next?
Oh, I have a film called Stoic that I've completed at the end of last year that I'm really looking forward to, and I'm hearing great things about it with Antonio Banderas. So that comes out. It's basically about this man who has a horrible thing happen to his life. He realizes it wouldn't have happened to him had he been more stoic in nature, and his approach to some things. He wouldn't have took such a big risk, and it comes back to haunt him in a horrific way. And he redeems himself, and that's Antonio plays that character, and I kind of help him along the way. I get to play a police officer, which is always a joy for me. My father was a cop. You know, it's those little things. Like,
full circle.
You can relate to some world. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I play we have another extension of the Day of the Dead that we did.
Yeah, I saw this because I'm from close to the Pittsburgh area, and they're big on their zombie movies out there. George Romero was, you know, he made the classics out there. You got a Day of the Dead remake coming out, right?
Yes, and I don't know quite how it's going to turn out.
Okay, you're a zombie in it.
I'm a zombie. I'm the character that has qualities of humanity in him, good and bad. When they offered me that role, I think they offered it to me because they saw me as Jonah Hex on social media. And they were like, oh, Jonathan, look, he looks like a zombie here. Why don't we, he can sit in a chair for 3 hours, 4 hours.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
So they hired me. I think that's how I got hired.
Okay. Well, hey, from Jonah Hex to a zombie, man, that's, there's so much cool. How can folks find out more about these projects when they're coming out? What they can expect you on social media and Facebook and Twitter and all that?
Yeah, at John Scheck on all those. That's probably the best way. I mean, I sometimes hear from, you know, contracts and promotional stuff, publicity that I have to do. So I usually hear it first, and I tell everybody, and everyone could look out for them. And then I got, you know, some other projects that are coming up. I've taken a break here. I worked since my son was born. I've worked nonstop. I think because as a father, I was frightened that I wouldn't have any money. So I just worked. And so I'm taking I took a pause here to kind of spend time with him, number one, but also to get my footing back into the place in which I'm supposed to be. And you know, turn the tide, you have to do that as an actor. If you're working all the time, you can't get other things. That's one thing actors need to realize. When you choose to do one thing, you're basically turning down everything else in that timeline. So that's what I'm trying to, you know, get to is try to get that next groove for my career. And it's all coming together.
And I see you popping up at comic conventions. You got anything coming up in the near future here that folks can come up and get some Jonah Hex stuff signed?
I don't do the comic book of the convention, comic book conventions that much, but you know, I'd love to do more of it. It's just that time thing. I mean, I'll get back into it over the summer.
Yeah.
People that call me up and they got to make a stink about it so that the conventions really, you know to put me at a table there. I think that's really what it comes down to. Cause they got to make the phone call and make the deal and all that kind of stuff.
You're getting your priorities straight. That a lesson learned from Tom Hanks all those years ago, right?
Absolutely. There I learned go. So much from Tom.
Yeah. He taught you the important things, man. That's good to know, too. Yeah, look, life lessons from your dad and Tom Hanks. Can you ask for anything better?
No, I can't. I'm very grateful for those two.
I'm telling you what, Jonathan, I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more of you as Jonah Hex. That's going to be cool. Speaking for myself and the listeners, I hope we see a lot of Jonah Hex, hopefully a series. That'd be awesome. But looking forward to all these projects we talked about. And thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
My pleasure, Joe.
Ruthless bounty hunter on screen, super dad in real life. Very cool, very cool. Big thanks to Jonathan for stopping by the lair today. I would be quite surprised if he does not appear in season 3 of Legends of Tomorrow. We want more Jonah Hex, right? Look, we want a series, so we want a lot more Jonah Hex. We'll take what we can get on Legends of Tomorrow, though, so hopefully more appearances there. Season 1 of Legends, it is available on DVD and Blu-ray from Warner Brothers. That set includes a very cool behind-the-scenes feature on the making of the first Jonah Hex episode. A little bit of background on the comic book character, making of, that was the episode The Magnificent Eight. And Season 2, that is going to be released August 15th on home video. It's going to have a lot more cool extra features, I'm sure, all the way through that, so you're going to want to pick up that set. Of course, the episodes for both seasons, so you can catch both Jonah Hex episodes. They are streaming right now on Netflix. So there's a few ways you have to catch up on Legends of Tomorrow before cast and crew return this fall for Season 3. I'll put the links to purchase Season 1 and pre-order Season 2 in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net, along with links to follow Jonathan on social media. You are definitely going to want to do that. If and when he returns to Hex, and I'm sure he will be returning, you'll be in the know by following him on social media. Hey, if you're not already, be sure to follow Comic Book Central on social media as well if you're out there. Facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Don't forget the network. Twitter at Comic Book CTRL. Links to both of those are on the website, comicbookcentral.net. Those are the best ways to share the lair. Share the episode posts each week. When I post those on Facebook, share them with your friends and family. Retweet them on Twitter. Get the word out to everyone you know. Share the lair, because that is where all the cool kids and all the stars are hanging out each and every week. This is the place you want to be. If you haven't already, subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a review while you're there. I really appreciate that. It helps get the word out. You can also find each and every episode in the archive section of the website. Also, Blueberry and Stitcher, all the episodes are there as well. If you like Comic Book Central on Facebook, in the About section, there's a complete episode guide. So you can check it out. Check out your favorite celebrities. Go check out those episodes there. So be sure to give the show a like on Facebook if you haven't already. And don't forget to drop me a line, folks. If you love Jonah Hex on Legends, I want to hear about it. If you have a favorite Jonah Hex tale in the comic books, I want to hear about it. If you've got guest ideas, favorite comic book themed movies or TV shows, I want to hear everything. Joe@comicbookcentral.net. That's how you can get a hold of me. You can click the Signal Me tab on the website or record a voicemail message at the website. Play it right here on the show. I want to hear from you. All right, you cowpokes, time for me to mosey on out of here for today. But don't you fret none. I'll be riding back into town before you know it. Because next week on Comic Book Central, it is warp speed ahead to the 24th century as I continue my year-long celebration of Star Trek The Next Generation's 30th anniversary. Joining me next week, all the way from the Q Continuum, that's right, the Enterprise crew's greatest adversary, the incredible actor who brought Q to life, John DeLancey. He is going to be stopping by to celebrate 30 years of Next Gen. It's going to be a fun one. You do not want to miss it. Again, if you haven't already subscribed on iTunes, you won't miss it. You're going to be able to get that episode. Until then, keep riding tall in the saddle. Keep reading those comic books. Thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Imported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.